Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The following is a special presentation of the Mungadas St. Louis Honda Sports Open Line.
Welcome to Sports and More with Mike Claiborne on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Sports and More. Mike Claiborne here. We're in spring training, and we thought it would be a great idea to talk to the senior writer and maybe the senior media person in St. Louis sports. I think it's safe to say you are. He is Rick Hummel of St. Louis Post-Dispatch. How many years now for you covering sports?
Well, I've been at the Post-Dispatch 49, and I did my first Cardinal stuff in 73, so it'll be the 48th season for that.
48, you're going to go to 50 at least.
I'm hoping to make 50 then
reevaluate,
as they say.
But I hope to go longer than that. Be on senior status at that point.
Let's take another look at it a year and a half from now. Yeah.
Well, there's a lot of things I want to talk to you about, and let's start off talking about spring trainings. You've covered so many of them. What was your first one like, and who was your manager?
Well, the first year was Rapp, and then Boyer took over in 78, you know, so that Whitey was the one I spent most of my time with early on from 80 to 90, and 81 to 90 in spring training. But everything was just different because you didn't have six fields. You might have had one.
Well, over at Al Lang, all you had was the one.
Yeah.
Unless you went out to the complex, and that was, 15, 20 minute drive.
You had maybe two or three out there. Wasn't a big deal.
That was amazing in its own right when you look at the facilities today. Vern Rapp, although he was your rookie guy, most challenging guy, because you've been blessed to be able to deal with some pretty fair and obviously successful managers as well, being in a Cardinal uniform. What was he like?
I liked Vern. I thought he wasn't for everybody, I guess. He was stern. I thought he managed a really good game as far as handling the bullpens and stuff, but that isn't enough. Maybe even wasn't enough 40 years ago. You got to be able to get along with people too, and that's where he had his failings. He had trouble getting along with his players, and you don't have to have them like you, but they lost respect for him pretty quickly.
You know, I think guys like that, and as we fast forward to today, some really good managers would not have survived today in how things are covered and how players perceive managers and things of that nature. And I would put him in that category. Now, obviously, I didn't cover him like you did, but from everything I was able to see from a distance, I don't think a guy like that would have survived long unless he would have changed with the times.
And Billy Martin would have changed teams more often now than he did then.
He might be coaching in the National Hockey League by now because we run out of baseball teams. Is that the biggest change you've seen also as far as media relation with not just players but managers? Because, as I mentioned, we've been pretty fortunate to have guys who kind of got it as far as how to deal with the media and certainly the players. But is that the biggest change, one of the other big changes you've seen?
Sure. And media is even more demanding on those guys than it was because they didn't have to have sessions before and after every game or every workout. You kind of got them when you could. You know, they weren't unavailable, but there wasn't like, okay, he's speaking between 8 and 9 this morning and then before batting practice or at a certain time this afternoon or 5 minutes after the game, whatever. It's more hidebound now, but you could get these guys anytime you wanted.
Yeah, that's a huge difference. But with that said, have they changed with regard to their answers? Because everything is instant now. A guy could read it in the paper the next day and maybe he'd have a problem with a sentence here or a paragraph there. But now it's right there for everybody to hear and see. They don't have to be misquoted like they would accuse people of being back in the day.
Well, they're very guarded at least much more guarded than before, just because of what you said, that it's instantaneous, and there are also many people in the loop whom they don't quite know. There's some microphones out there. They're not quite sure to whom they're attached.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, I'm watching that circus with Houston. That was a no-win situation, no matter what they would admit to. I just think the media had their mind made up that they were going to try and get to as close to the bottom of this as they could. And the Astros just didn't have enough answers to suffice. And I think we're going to see that again and again and again. And I want to ask you, do you think that's something when every new city they go into, they'll have to hold court like that?
I don't think so. I think they think they've done it for this spring. Mm-hmm. Now, they may be wrong about that, but I think when they'll have to do it in Houston.
Right.
Again, like they had their fan fest or whatever. Nothing much happened there a couple of weeks ago.
No.
They were much more forthcoming, if you would call it that, yesterday. At least they were forthcoming a little bit. And during the season, you probably want to get to New York or something.
Or the teams that had the biggest bark about what they did.
When they go to Anaheim or New York. I don't know if they play the Dodgers or not, but when they go to New York Yankee Stadium, there'll be some people wanting to know some stuff. But when they show up in Kansas City, I don't think it's going to be a big deal.
No, I don't think. I don't think Kansas City or Detroit. Yeah, I don't think Detroit's going to lodge a huge complaint about how things unfold.
Or Seattle.
Or Baltimore.
Yeah.
There are a lot of teams. I mean, if you're going to say, you know, had they not been cheating, we would have only lost 98 games this year compared to 100 and plus, you know.
Well, so it's like the guys that were on steroids that weren't any good, you know, in the day. I mean, there were a whole bunch more guys than Bonds and Clemens and whoever you want to name.
I would agree.
Sammy Sosa and McGuire doing steroids, but they weren't any good. They were lousy before, and they were lousy afterwards.
Maybe even worse after that because they had that real false hope, and I think that got a lot of guys in trouble. So spring training, you've been to a lot of them. What was the most interesting one? Because I can recall guys falling off a seawall or Geronimo Pena stepping on his glove, pulling his shoulder out. I mean, there have been some bizarre items that have happened in spring training.
I'd like to have seen that seawall that Coxie fell off.
Yes, I don't know if it was
a two-and-a-half-foot seawall.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know if it was a seawall, but that's a story he's going to
stick
with.
I think there was a six-pack involved.
At least we can
assume that.
Well, you know, at that stage of his career, it may have been just a six-pack. Now it's going to take a whole lot more.
It was like Easter Sunday, and he didn't have to make the trip to Vero or some godforsaken place they had to play that day. And he was allowed to be home that day. He can do whatever he wanted to, go fishing. And Coxie usually likes to have a six-pack to go fishing.
At least.
There might have been a seawall. Might have been Bobby Bonds fell off a curb one time, we were told, and hurt his ankle, you know, we were told.
Well, you know, it's funny as you bring it up in that manner. Of all the stories that you've been given, which one was the biggest eye roll you had? Like, you got to be kidding me. You going to really stay with that one?
Pedro Guerrero was in Houston
I knew you.
And he had played every game all season. He was very proud of that. And we're like in late August here, and how do we phrase this here? He ran afoul of some bad company the night before. Is that fair?
That's a very fair way to put it.
Mickey's perhaps put in his drink.
I think Visine was
and perhaps some jewelry was taken. And
Not all of them.
And the next day he showed up in the training room and he couldn't play. And we were told he had eaten some bad fish.
Right.
Which I guess to some degree, I don't know. I mean, let's not even go there. But he had eaten something that didn't agree with him.
Yes. Yeah.
And he didn't play that day. And, you know, there was no other recourse. Pete was not available to comment about it, just as well. And
although the story is that as he laid on the training table, he was still trying to convince Whitey, I can do one thing and that still hit.
Yeah. And I'm kind of surprised he didn't get in the game. I believe that's the only game he missed that year, unless he missed one right at the end. That's among the stories. Geronimo Pena falling on his glove. It's stuck. He was taking infield up in Clearwater, and it's stuck, and he just toppled over. He had some like pine tar on his glove or something. Clearwater was the site of a fine memory. This goes back to a little before spring training started, when I called Whitey to talk to him about his pitchers, and he had a couple on the on the roster to go into spring training that I didn't think were had any chance to make the team. And I said, what are these guys doing on your roster? He says, huh? When it's time for you and me to go have cocktails, these guys are going to be pitching in the ninth and tenth innings of the game. I said, okay. And so, sure enough, there was a game in Clearwater. The game was tied 3-3, let's say, in the bottom of the ninth. And a Phillies guy gets a triple to lead off the inning. So, as opposed to just playing the infield in, trying to cut off the run at home, Whitey says, we're going to walk the next two guys intentionally to load the bases, setting up force plays, and knowing full well the guy is also going to walk the guy after that, exactly. And the game's going to be over. And at ball three, I was down on the foul line there. I could see he'd instructed the clubhouse guy to start picking up the stuff in the clubhouse. Ball four is in the dirt, and the team was halfway to the bus by the time the pitcher had come off the field.
He was famous for that. He'd take a rag on with him on those long road trips because he didn't want to be there all day. And back then, you might play 11 innings.
I saw the first game in Pompano Beach where Doug Rader was managing the Rangers. It had to be 1981 or two, something like that. And they decided they were out of pitchers. It was 8-8. It was kind of a long game. They might have been pretty close. It was the third game of a Cardinals trip they'd played in down here. When the Montreal and the Braves trained in West Palm Beach, they played the first two with them, and they went down to Pompano for the third one. And they might have been. That was the first time I've ever seen them be out of pitchers. Now, you see them. They'll be out of pitchers in the first game of the year, like Miami and the Cardinals, and there'll be 17 guys sitting in the bullpen.
They're not out of pitchers. Yeah, exactly. Rick Hummel's our guest. Stand by. We've got more coming up after this.
This is a special presentation of the Mungadas St. Louis Honda Sports Open Line.
Welcome back to Sports and More. Once again, Mike Claiborne on KMOX.
Welcome back, everybody. We continue with Sports and More. Mike Claiborne here, and our special guest is the Hall of Fame writer, and he is affectionately called the Commish. Rick Hummel is our guest, talking a little bit about spring training. I look at spring training a little differently because you hear about this guy and this guy's who they're looking at. And then when spring training rolls along, you just kind of look around and you say, okay, I'm waiting on something. And my favorite Red Shanding story, this was a few years ago, a player had been highly touted and they said, you better pay attention to this guy. So I asked Red about him and he said, well, get in the car. We'll go over here and look at him for a bit. So we watched him for maybe 10, 15 minutes, you know, take some BP, took some balls. And I just kind of said, well, I don't know. I think jury's still out on him. And I kind of wanted to see what Red was going to say. And I kind of floated it out there a second time. And he just turned and looked at me and said, can't play. And that was all you needed to know. And that guy was out of the organization, you know, by weeks in, I think. But how many guys have you seen like that in your career that come in with this promise and this hope? And then all of a sudden you find out he's a jag. He's just a guy.
There might be one every year. The story you quote was exactly the one I experienced in the press box with Red maybe 10 years ago. I'd sit in one of those booths down the line from your radio booth and the regular press box, and I'd be prattling on and on about a guy. And he didn't even look at me. He just said, he can't play. And that was the end of the discussion.
Yeah.
So getting back to your original question, there's probably one or two guys every year. I think the more you go along, maybe there are fewer because we're a little smarter than we used to be, hopefully.
Mm-hmm. every now and then we get excited by
stuff, and now we think, wait, hold on, let's temper our enthusiasm just a bit here and not make too many outlandish statements until we're a little bit more sure.
What about the guy, and I can think of one player off the top of my head who just had a on-fire spring training. He couldn't get him out. All of a sudden, here comes the season, and he fizzles out like a firecracker on the 4th of July in a rainstorm. I'm thinking of Jim Lindemann.
Yeah. We don't know what would have happened. He hurt his back diving for a ball right at the end of spring, which unfortunately was the day after they traded Vance Leick
and Mike LaValliere
to Pittsburgh for Tony Pena, which they had committed to Lindemann at that time. Whitey had seen him. I mean, Vance Leick was not hitting left-handers to Whitey's satisfaction. And maybe Andy never really hit left-handers great, but he was a wonderful player,
right,
as it turns out. But he thought Lindemann could be an everyday player against left- and right-handed pitching. And he started off pretty well, but then his back just began killing him. He had, I think he had 8 home runs for the season, and I think he maybe played only one other year for the Cardinals, and he kind of bounced around a little bit, and was done before, well before age 30. But he tore up the spring, and not just at the beginning of the spring when the other pitchers, other teams' pitchers weren't sharp yet. He was doing it.
He was jumping on guys late in the spring that year.
And he had a pretty good postseason when he had to play when Jack Clark could not play first base in 87. He'd gotten hurt sliding in Montreal. And then they had Lindemann and Dan Dreesen platooning at first. And Lindemann hit a couple home runs for him in the postseason.
You know, I'm trying to think of some other guys who would – I think he might be in a category by himself. Who are some other guys you can think of that – had promise in the spring, and all of a sudden when they said, we're playing for keeps, it just didn't work?
Not many come to mind, except there was a guy named Alex Cole who had some promise, mm-hmm. and I think he played with Colorado and some other teams and did okay. Yeah. But there was one time in St. Pete where 31 consecutive swings in the batting cage, he did not get the ball out of the cage. I'm not talking about hitting for base hits, but balls were in the cage. Either
they were all right there in there with him, huh?
When they say pick up the balls, all he had to do was reach out for one hand, and he had half of them. So, and he says, Whitey says, hum? I don't think he's going to make it.
Whitey was a good judge of character and talent, and he was so blunt. He came from the Red Shandine School, a few words to assess a player. How much fun did you have with him in spring training? Because he could spot a good player right off the bat, and he could spot a bad one and wonder how did he even get on the roster.
I had fun with him virtually every day, but spring training was even looser, you know, and you didn't have any limitations. You could go in after the game, sit there, have a beer with him, and talk about stuff, or sometimes you'd offer your beer before the workout.
Knowing what he was going to deal with that day.
So he was... And it didn't take him long. I mean, he formed judgments quickly on players, but he's allowed to do that because he knew what he was talking about, mm-hmm. you know, as opposed to us who did not maybe know this, not maybe, did not know as much.
No doubt.
And it was fun to get his early, and you had to do a lot to change his opinion. He made up his mind, and he was almost always right about that. But he would make quick judgments because he was a terrific judge of personnel, as his record has shown as a manager, general manager,
farm director,
coach. He was a third base mm-hmm. coach, a good third base coach, and whatever he did have, you know, he was consultant for a while. I mean, he knew what he was doing, still does.
What about Joe Torre? I mean, there's a Hall of Fame manager who managed in St. Louis briefly, didn't have enough talent to win with, but you know, he made it interesting. He had some good players, but not enough of them.
He didn't have enough pitching.
He had Lee Smith, and that was about it.
Yeah, and he didn't have him. Well, he had to trade him in 93 or 4. He was here like 4 years, and Joe mm-hmm. was here about 5 or so. Joe had a good offensive team. Those are the years that Gilkey and Lankford had just come up, and they had Jeffries, who was a wonderful hitter for a while, and Zia was a good hitter then. Mark Whitten was a good player. Jordan came along.
Felix Jose, and
Pagnozzi was a legitimate player, and Scotty Cooper started off well and didn't kind of fizzle, but they had a good lineup, and Luis Alcia was a contributor offensively too, and Payne when he was healthy. They had a good lineup, but not enough pitching. I mean, Tewksbury was their H with Omar Olivares and Real Cormier and that group, Alan Watson. And
was Juan Augusto part of that
I suspect.
Collection?
Yeah. He might have been with the Whitey's group, but Joe got in trouble the year after the strike in 95 when the replacement players were playing. Mm-hmm. And Joe, being a longtime fan of the players and was a former player rep, national player rep, made it clear that he would rather the real players be there. And that was not a popular decision to take with Anheuser-Busch bankrolling these other guys,
exactly.
You know, stockbrokers to be playing down here, whoever was playing. And
I think that's how fantasy camps got started.
Yes, that greased the skids for Joe right away when they had a chance to dump him during the season. Because Gussie had those guys come down. They were passing out $20,000 checks to these guys in the clubhouse up at the complex, the Busch complex up there. And Joe was just shaking his head saying, I'm not going to be here much longer. And he was right.
And he was right. Yeah. He was right. Then you move on to Tony, a guy we really didn't know a lot about, although he was in the organization as a player early in his career. We didn't know a lot about him. We knew he was in Oakland. We knew he was in Chicago with the White Sox and got both those teams to postseason. But I remember when he got here, everybody thought he was going to manage the American League way, sit back and wait for the three-run homer. What was he like to learn about and try and follow along with?
Well, once you got over the fact that he had a lot of his old Oakland staff with him, not that those guys weren't good coaches, but they weren't traditional Cardinals coaches. Like, we went from Cardinal coaches to no Cardinal coaches, mm-hmm. Except for Red. And you're right, though. He didn't have to play that stodgy home run or nothing ball because Oakland had Ricky Henderson and guys like that. Mm-hmm. They played other ways, too. They just made a lot of noise with their home runs with the Bash Brothers. But they had Carney Lansford was a really good player. Then he was also a coach on the teams that
Dave
came
Henderson
here.
Dave might Henderson might have been as good of a two-hitter as you'll ever see.
Sure, sure. And the catching, you know, with Steinbeck and Hassie was excellent. They had wonderful pitching. But he got used to the National League game one time early in the season. They're in Atlanta, I think it's the first trip. And he went out to make a pitching change and also bring in a position player, and like double switch the middle of the inning, which he didn't have to do before. This was even before interleague play, you know, in 96. And he goofed it up. He went to the mound to change the pitcher. Then he brought in the position player, and he thought he was making a double switch. And Randy Marsh says, no. In this league, that is not the way we do it. And he never did it wrong again.
That's right. That's a great point. He's Rick Hummel, ladies and gentlemen. He's the Hall of Fame writer. I'm Mike Claiborne. This is Sports and More on Your Voice for the Cardinals.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
M-O-X.
This is a special presentation of the Mungadas St. Louis Honda Sports Open Line.
Welcome back to Sports and More. Once again, Mike Claiborne on KMOX.
We continue with our visit with Hall of Fame writer Rick Hummel, talking about spring training and managers he's had a chance to deal with. So what manager, and you've worked with a few of them, each one of them, I'm sure, gave you some different insight because they all managed differently in one sense. But then when you turn around and look at them, they all stuck to certain core values that I think most good managers have.
I guess Whitey gave me the most insight. He taught me more about the game and how to deal with people in the game than anybody. It wasn't just about their abilities. It's about getting to know them as people, you know, mm-hmm. which is part of our job. The more you do our job, the more we learn that. We think we're just dealing with these players, but they have personalities too, and they have good days and bad days, and as do we. So that's where I learned the most. And those workouts lasted so gosh long in the early days because they have fewer fields. Mm-hmm. They'd be out there till 2:30 or 3, and you had plenty of time to talk to the manager during that time.
Oh, yeah.
And you'd get a lot of stuff you could use and some stuff you couldn't use, but you would file it away for future reference. And he was one of those guys that even during the season would tell his players about their responsibilities to the media, which I've never heard any other manager do it this way. But he'd say, okay, at the end of the game, I want you guys to be sitting at your lockers for 10 minutes. If nobody comes up to talk to you, before 10 minutes has elapsed, and you're free to do whatever you do. And they may, you know, come later. You can choose to talk to them or not talk to them after the 10 minutes. But for 10 minutes, you have to be there. So you get in there, and there they were, all lined up. But you wanted to talk to him first because he was going to give you
15 to 20 minutes.
That was a problem.
Because Whitey could give you an 8-minute answer to one question if you turned
him
loose.
He said Casey Stengel taught him that.
And it worked.
Yeah.
Because by the time you were done talking to him, guys were halfway home in their cars. I mean, the players with that clubhouse would be cleared out, especially after a loss.
Well, he had the knack of you asking one question, and in the course of the answer, he has answered six more that he created along the way. He created the question and answered them.
He thought you were playing along with him, and he was just thinking about the question he thought you should be asking, and he was going to answer it for you. You know, I tell you who else is good at that. Mike Schilt, I'm learning. You will ask him a question, and he will give you a good answer, but he will also stack on something that he would expect to be a follow-up question to that. A lot of managers don't take that into account, but he's a pretty savvy guy. And for him to be a big league manager with small time on his resume, he obviously learned that coming up in the game as being a manager in other places, which I think I appreciate in a lot of cases.
And those guys are doing themselves a favor by doing it that way. If they don't like that part of the job, dealing with the media, they have to make it as pleasant as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And our good friend Dusty Baker is real good at that. You ask him a question, and you got about five more answers before you ask the next one, you know. And maybe a real good question has come up out of that, and he'll answer that one too.
And you know what I love about both those guys? They will give you an answer to something you weren't thinking about, which leads you in another direction. And it does two things. It kind of takes away what the sting you may have had in store. But he also has put something on your mind as a follow-up question to the answer that he already gave you. It's a fascinating approach that they have. And unlike the other sports, they do it every day. I mean, the other sports, you know, you have an off day here and there. Or in football, coach talks twice a week, maybe three times a week. But in baseball, they're there every day.
Yeah, managers like Dusty and Schilt now, and Whitey and Tony was good about this too. They love to see your expression when they gave you an answer you weren't expecting, like your mouth would drop open and they start laughing.
Yeah, they get a kick out of it. They really do. Most fun manager you've had a chance to cover, no matter whether he's a Cardinal or not, just a guy that you enjoy talking to.
Whitey would be the one. Yeah. But the other guys I enjoyed dealing with, Leland, when he managed the Pirates and Miami and Colorado and a whole bunch of other teams, and even when he was a coach here. I always enjoyed Bobby Cox, Bruce Bochy. Those are fun guys to have dealt with. Joe Madden, I like to deal with.
Yeah,
Joe's
good.
And not so much the American League because we hadn't seen them much. But Lasorda to a degree. But then you know, there's so many other layers you have to go through.
Yeah, if you didn't say Charlie Gito, you know, you probably didn't get. Yeah,
I like Brian
Price
of the Reds was fun to deal with. You know,
really,
yeah.
Who was one that maybe? I'm not saying you were glad to see him go, but it just didn't click, or you just found it to be a little bit more challenging than what it should have been.
Well, the guy with Pittsburgh was an enjoyable guy to deal with, Jim Tracy, with the Dodgers
also. I like
also.
Jim Tracy, yeah.
I like them both. But you would ask him a question, and he would answer that question and then go off into a tremendous tangent. The answer would take 10 minutes, and you didn't have time for that. Sometimes it was, you know, there were some stories involved. But there were no other questions that he was answering along the way. He was just talking.
You know, it's just another chapter in the Casey Stengel book of how to deal with the media. That's all. Just another chapter. When you get in those situations and you feel like you've had enough, how do you try and get out of it where you got all you need, but yet and still try and stay engaging enough where there may be another crumb that may fall off the plate?
Sometimes it's a physical thing. Depends where you are in the room. If you're sitting on the couch and everybody else is by the door, it's a little tougher to get up and start strolling out there in the middle of an answer. But if you're kind of hanging in to the door and you can kind of nod your head and wave at him and say thanks and get out of there, that's the best position to be in.
Oh, when the squeak of the door takes place and we all know you're leaving. That can kind of sometimes be a heads up as well. Rick Hummel is our guest. We're going to come back. We've got one final segment, and it comes your way after this timeout.
This is a special presentation of the Mungadas St. Louis Honda Sports Open Line.
Welcome back to Sports and More. Once again, Mike Claiborne on KMOX.
We continue with Rick Hummel, the Hall of Fame writer. One of the fun things for me in this job of mine is going to winter meetings, and one of my favorite moments is the day when you and I were standing there and you had just been told you were going to the Hall of Fame. You're going to the writer's wing. I'll never forget it. And I was emotional because of the fact of knowing you and knowing what you meant to me and countless readers and people in the media. What was that like for you? Because, you know, obviously it doesn't happen every day. And it's really kind of like the high watermark of your career when it comes to being recognized by, you know, your colleagues.
Well, first, I appreciate you saying that, Clips. And second, I knew I was one of the final three. So and I thought I had a fair chance that they were going to make the announcement on a morning. And there's usually a phone call before everyone else finds out about it. And the day before, Jack O'Connell, the Secretary Treasurer of the Baseball Players Association, who was going to make the call, asked me where I was staying. Because this was in Disney, where were spread out in several different hotels there. You know, they had Swan and the Osprey or whatever other
birds they had. I remember that one well. You know, you almost had to take an Uber from one place to the other. It was so spread out.
So they call me in the morning. I mean, the phone rang at the appointed time, and I've heard it. But still, to have other people, I haven't forgot to this day how many people seemed to have enjoyed hearing that I got the award to be in the Hall of Fame, and they seemed as happy or happier about it than I am. They asked me to sign autographs, and you know, they didn't even know me, but they knew who I'd worked for the Post-Dispatch for a long time, and I thought it was just going to pervade to myself and my family and my friends, but no, way beyond that, I didn't have any idea.
Well, I think because you've touched so many people, you've been such a pro and shown so many people the ropes, and not that you had to give them instruction, but I think it was almost like when you were growing up and your parents would say, hey, how come you can't act like such and such Johnny down the street? You know, he puts his toys away. Something along that line. I think the same applies. Hey, how come you can't be like Rick Hummel? Yeah, he's a nice guy. He gets good stories. Media, the players and the managers like him, and he's fair. How come you can't be like that guy? And I think a lot of people would like to be in that position, and for one reason or another, it doesn't work. But I think you've always been a gold standard for people who want to do it the fair and objective way.
Well, thanks. Thanks very much again. I just go back to how I was brought up, where my parents, my mother told me, just treat people the way you would like them to treat you. And it was as simple. I never forgot that. It doesn't always apply, and you don't always do it, but you try to do it. Yeah.
Spring training is always fun because it's kind of like a gathering of everybody after the winter. I want to talk about this spring training for a bit. This is an interesting team where, surprisingly enough, as good as the pitching was last year, the competition for a spot on this team is even greater, in my opinion, than it was last year. The competition in the outfield is greater than what I think it was last year. And I think we may see some competition for that 26th spot, that bench role situation as well. Give me your thoughts on this spring, because a lot of people are still hooting and hollering about, hey, what are we going to do about the middle of the order? What are we going to do about Arenado? I mean, we can't win with this current lineup. But give me your thoughts on what you see, and is there a timetable?
Well, touching on the first thing you discussed, the pitching, there's guys, Carlos Martinez is a different pitcher now. He's not the closer anymore. He's the starter that he's always wanted to be and was twice on an all-star team. He adds a different dimension to the rotation if he's in it. Alex Reyes, of whom there is very little expected, might come on to be a bullpen guy, later a starter, but maybe not. The competition in the outfield, the contenders have done a little bit less. They have a little bit less on their resume. O'Neill has a little bit on his resume, Lane Thomas even less, and Carlson none other than his minor league resume. I do think picking up Brad Miller for not very much money was a good sign for them. He's a left-handed hitting guy with 30 home runs 4 years ago when he was healthy. Now he's also 4 years older now, but I think
some pop late last year.
Yeah,
I think that's
he had eight home runs the last month for the Phillies. And I looked it up to see if all of them were hit in Philadelphia, and they were not.
They weren't in Philadelphia.
No.
They weren't in Colorado or Cincinnati.
Well, some were
so
hit
he
there,
might
but,
be a legit guy.
But and I went back a little farther. In the last time you played in St. Louis, We got a picture of Dexter Fowler looking up as the ball's landed in the center field shrubbery that hit off
You're
Lance
right.
Lynn.
That's right.
He tied
yeah.
the last game that Tampa Bay played there.
And you know, they put on a hitting clinic. Remember Steven Souza Jr. hit yeah. one almost across the street over the Ballpark Village. And there was another player.
That's the only game they lost in that series was that
You're
game.
You're right. Yeah, they put on a clinic. So you like that. But I think it also says that there's competition for that utility spot where – this team, this organization is a little left-hand short right now. And if he can do anything from the left side, a guy like Jairo Munoz or somebody along that line, he may have to fight to stay on this roster.
Well, especially if they want to keep three catchers. Now, maybe with the addition of Miller, they won't see the need to have to pinch hit Wieters as much because he was going to be the only left-handed hitter off the bench other than, let's say, if Edmund was not playing or was playing. So you could have, if you have three catchers, Edmund's going to be one reserve infielder, let's say, and then you have Munoz, you have Edmundo Sosa, who had a big year in AAA yeah. last year, and you have Brad Miller. Well, only one of those three guys is going to make it. When you look at a five-man bench with 13-man staff, you're going to have one of the other outfielders, whether it's O'Neill or Lane Thomas, will be on the bench. You have one backup catcher, and you'll have Edmund, and you'll have... You know, if you have another backup catcher in Kisner, then you have only one other guy. And Sosa and Munoz both might be in trouble. And even if Miller had not been acquired, I think Munoz was in trouble with Sosa being on the club, now being a better defender at some of these positions.
You know, that's a good point you make because Munoz can play a lot of positions, but I don't know if he's good at any of them to the point where he can keep a job. And you know, being a pinch hitter, a young guy coming off the bench is really, really hard if you don't get enough consistent at-bats. And I think a lot of these young players really struggle with that, and I think we saw that with him last year. Now, when he had a few games back-to-back, he was pretty solid. But, you know, this is a very fluid game right now, and I'm just not sure if a guy can go that long without having a chance to play and still expect to be effective.
I think if they can convince him to go to AAA and play 2 or 3 months and play every day – doesn't need to be the same position every day, but just play every
day. Just move around, yeah.
Because he can hit, he can run. He's got more skills than half the guys on that team as far as overall ball skills, you know, throwing, running, hitting.
And push comes to shove. He could still catch.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's been a while because he used to catch his brother, who was a pitcher. He's a versatile guy, I think, and we haven't seen him yet. I don't know what he looks like, what kind of shape he's in. And I always wondered if his conditioning was better, how much more effective
he
would be.
Is he even here yet?
I haven't seen him.
I mean, he's the one guy that's not here. You'd think a guy would like him.
He and Justin Williams. I think
Justin Williams came in yesterday.
Yeah, he showed it yesterday. But, I mean, if it's that close, you got to be here. And it's not to impress the coaches, although that helps, but just to get into a routine early. Because if you think you can just walk out and start getting hacks, I just don't know if that works anymore, does it?
Especially when the day that Miller is signed, I'm on the next plane, man.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly.
Who's this guy?
Yeah, exactly. So I think it's going to be an interesting challenge. Give me your thought. And I've always told people that I don't really put as much stock in the spring training roster as I do as we get on. Because, as you know, Flag Day is my high water day. Give me your thoughts on a timetable that you look at on how to value this team as we get into the season.
I don't think you can make all the decisions on what you see in spring training. You're going to have to give these guys a chance to play. Now, is it a month? Is it 6 weeks? I don't think it's any longer than 6 weeks before I look in a different direction. But these guys are going to need a chance. I mean, this includes Bader, too. You know, I know he's hit some prodigious home runs early in camp here, but they've all been off the coaches.
Right, you know? Exactly, yeah. And, I mean, he could hit one off of me.
I don't watch any of those batting practices.
No.
Yeah, and Thomas and O'Neill and Carlson I still think is going to be sent out, and Bader, all four of those guys is going to need more time to play during the season when you're playing against – you know, give them a chance. You just can't
What happens, though, if Carlson just is lights out? And all of a sudden, you're talking about him like maybe Washington talked about
Soto,
or Atlanta talked about Acuña Jr.
Sure.
What happens if he just does everything you ask him to and then some?
Well, you look like a dope if you send him out then. If he hits 300 to 400, somewhere in there, with power and speed, and he plays the positions, and you can't convince the fans. You got 25 guys better than him. You know,
yeah,
who are these 25 other guys? You know,
yeah. So somebody's got to pull a hamstring, a la Bobby Bonilla, you know, to make sure. And I think the reason why I bring it up, the game is trending so much younger that the younger guys are getting more opportunities now with less at bats in the minors because players or teams feel like he can play now.
You're right. I think in Carlson's case specifically, he had a really good season in Double A, and then one spectacular month in Triple A, but it was only 1 month in Triple A. So maybe they feel he could benefit by more time. But if he's, again, as you point out, lights out, and he's a, you know, he plays, he runs, he fields, he switch hitter. I mean, there's too many things going for him, other than the fact that, let's say you brought him with you, and then he stumbles, and you have to send him out. And you never know how that guy's going to react to his first failure, rather than sending him out for a while, and then you bring him up, and then you keep him up.
Yeah.
There's the two schools of thought.
I agree with the second school of thought along with this. I'm saying this all is predicated on somebody else spitting a bit, too, and that can happen as well. So
I think Tyler O'Neill can play. I think Lane Thomas can play. And I think Harrison Bader can play, but I don't know that he's as good a hitter as those other two guys. He's going to have to show me that.
He's going to have to show us a whole lot. 205 normally doesn't make you in the starting lineup.
You better catch every ball, including the ones that go over the wall.
Exactly. The ones that Ozuna couldn't catch, which is just about all of them. Rick Hummel, as always, man, it's great to visit with you. Let's have a fun spring. And as you mentioned, you're going to be doing this for a while, so I'm just appreciative of everything you meant to not only me and certainly your media colleagues, but certainly your readers and now your listeners.
Well, you've been very kind to me all these years, Claibs, and I thank you very much.
I'm going to keep it up. All right. I'm going to keep it up. He's Rick Hummel. I'm Mike Claiborne. We thank you for listening to another edition of Sports and More on your voice for the Cardinals, KMOX.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.